Hi everyone, welcome and thank you for joining us today for another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Asaro, and for this episode we have a very special guest with us, Mark Ridley. Mark, hello, welcome.
Hi Asaro, nice to meet you.
How Thanks are you?
I'm good, thank you. Cold but happy.
I can imagine, especially with this weather.
Yeah.
So before we begin, just for our listeners, I'm going to give a brief introduction to who you are and the topic of discussion, which is The Leader's Secret Code, your newly published title.
Close to my heart.
So Mark Ridley is founding director of Transform Performance International. He has worked as a strategist, chair and facilitator with global brands, investment houses and academic institutions for over 25 years in 60 countries. Mark is the co-author of The Leader's Secret Code. This book is for anyone who wants to learn the secrets of successful leadership based on interviews and analysis with some of the world's best performing leaders across a mix of industries, cultures and contexts. The authors present a rigorous evaluation of how leaders behave and how they are driven. So we've just given a very quick and brief nutshell about what we're going to talk about in the book and also what the book is about. So the first question is, what is being a leader in today's world? Are all managers leaders and vice versa?
Okay, Asaro, it's a really good place to start. I think everybody would agree that today's world is a very uncertain place. It's a very up and down kind of place. It's an increasingly complex kind of place. So I think being a leader in today's world is all about, dare I say the F word, flexibility. I think that anybody who simply relies on the product of their own previous experiences and assumes that those experiences will set them on the right course in the future is under a grave misapprehension. So I think leadership is absolutely about that flexible approach, enabling yourself to think differently and to accept the ideas and thoughts of others around you and to be able to look at what is working for others and think, could I transfer that into my world? I think it's about having your knowledge in the back of your mind and being able to apply that knowledge, but not necessarily being wedded to that knowledge. We're often told that the world today is very disrupted. And I think that if we do live in a disrupted world, and you only have to look at the world of politics, and believe me, I'm sorry, I'm not going there, don't worry. But you only have to look at the world of politics and what's going on in various parts of the world to know that we live in a very ambiguous time. So I think flexibility is the key thing. And you asked about managers, and of course managers can be leaders. I think there is a difference. I think a leader inspires. I think a leader motivates. I think a leader also creates a vision. You can be an excellent manager and not necessarily inspire, motivate, or provide a vision. And that's not to decry or criticize people who are in management roles who don't see themselves as leaders. There is a time and a place for both. Leaders, of course, can be great, can be managers. But I think it's about being emotionally invested. I think that's the difference. You know, we talk a lot today about the humanity of leadership, and I think that's really important. And indeed, I think in the book, especially if you read the chapter where we talk to 13 what we called iconic leaders from different industries, every single one of those 13 leaders, no matter what their background, talked in a way that connected them in a very human way, a very simple way, in a very emotional way. And I think that's quite worthy of note, because in today's world where, you know, people talk tough and people talk about processes and technology, I think we lose sight of humanity in leadership at our peril.
So you mentioned a very important point about being emotionally connected and that being a central aspect to the 13 leaders you talked about and to the notion of successful leadership. Another thing which your book mentions, and the research, it focuses on two key topics: destination beliefs and journey motivation. So what do these mean, and why are these also central aspects to successful leadership?
Great, another great question. Well, let's put it like this. Let's see if I can make it simple, because it is complex. Destination beliefs. We gave destination beliefs that label, if you like, Because what we realized when we were doing our research, when we were talking to the iconic leaders that I referred to, and when we were talking to the over 1,000 leaders from different walks of life that we also worked with for the research, it quickly became apparent that all of them held certain core, I'll call them values or beliefs, which were central to their core and which guided their leadership journey, if you like. And they were aspirational. And that's why we call them a destination belief, because you don't always reach your destination. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. But there was always an aspirational element to the way in which these leaders that we worked with talked about their life and their work. So the destination belief became a label. But what it also became clear to us is that people are different. Leaders are different. They're in different contexts. They're in different industries. They're at different stages in their lives. A generation X person might think and feel differently from a millennial person. So the way in which you go towards your destination depends on different motivators. And that's why where we got the idea of journey motivators. Let me give you an example. In the book, we talk about strategy as one of those destination beliefs. And the destination belief is all about the idea that, you know, all leaders recognize that you have to marshal your resources. You have to think about the direction of travel for your organization. But that differs from leader to leader. Have you ever noticed, for example, when you've been working with leaders, some people will devise a strategy based upon their gut feel, and they'll even talk about, I feel that's the right thing to do. Other people will say, no, before I take any decision about where I'm headed, I want to have my facts together.
Preemptive steps.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Now, which is right and which is wrong? You tell me. Yeah, that's the fun of doing this research. But what we now understand is that there is an optimal balance, it would seem, where the successful people understand there is an element of intuition and there's an element of gathering my facts. And that's really what the code is about. That's where you start to get the difference between destination beliefs and journey motivators.
A key aspect to leadership, and I want to really hone down on leadership styles, is this notion of leaders thinking, do I lead my teams forward by standing in front and pulling others and leading them in that way? Mm-hmm. Or do I almost create self-managed teams and allow my teams to lead themselves in the right direction? So essentially that whole notion of being a leader who leads his team without making them feel like they're being pulled.
Right. Now, what you refer to there is that destination belief that we refer to in the book as control. Okay. And I think you've picked a good one to focus on. So what we absolutely would see from the research is that being that directive leader absolutely has its place. You know, this is not about all or nothing. And why would it fit? Well, you know, if you're a leader in an organization which is at this moment going through a period perhaps of crisis, you know, are you honestly going to sit around with your people and say, hi folks, let's have a democratic vote and think about this? It may not be the right moment to do that. It might be the right moment to do that, only you know, you're the leader. Mm-hmm. You have to, you're paid to make the choice. But what we learn from the research, it absolutely is, there are moments when being more directive is useful. And certainly the most successful leaders seem to understand when to apply that directive state and when not to. Now, on the other hand, you mentioned this idea of a self-managing approach, what we call the participative leader. At the end of the day, let me use a metaphor, the captain of a ship can't always be in the engine room. The captain of a ship has to be on the bridge of that ship and has to allow the folks down in the bowels of the ship to make sure that it gets across the ocean. So you have to have that element of allowing people to do things their way whilst still maintaining that figurehead on the bridge. One of the iconics that we interviewed was Bruce Daisley. Until very recently, Bruce has been a senior vice president of Twitter. You know, he talks at length when we interviewed him about the great leaders that he has observed, who, as he terms it, shines a spotlight on their people. And I really like that metaphor. You know, he says the ultimate role of a leader is to operate the spotlight, you know, not to turn the spotlight on themselves. Mm-hmm. Even when you're being directive, it's about being directive in a way that allows the best to come out in your people. And another one of the iconics, Chris Newitt from Jaguar Land Rover, he has a similar philosophy. He talked to us about his passion for being as open and frankly honest as he can be. Because again, he says, the more open that you are, the more vulnerable perhaps, which again, very often people don't want to talk about being vulnerable as a leader. But the more vulnerable you are, the more that you actually give people in your team that psychologically safe place to be more open themselves, and you get a better result. But the truth of the matter is, when we interviewed, you know, over 1,000 people for this research, what we did was we looked at the views around participative versus directive, and we looked at the spread of responses. And what we did, Sarah, is we actually allocated 20 points. We said, okay, now we look at the results. If we allocate these 20 points against directive leadership and participative leadership, 8 points went to directive and 12 went to participative. So what that tells us is that actually successful leaders are clearly deploying both styles, but they prefer participation 50% more often. That is the secret code.
Being able to apply both,
yes,
but knowing which one you favour more.
And in the right context. Time and place. Flexibility. It's not about one style. It's about being able to identify, at this particular moment, my preference might be to be participative, but that in this moment might not be right. So if I apply it basically, if I 8 points out of 20, okay, just under half of the time, I probably need to be a little more directive, but more than 50% of the time, I need to be participative.
Why is that? Is it because leaders feel as if the outcome they're trying to reach is affected by whether or not they are more directive in certain approaches, more participatory, in the sense of when a leader is trying to aspire and is shining a spotlight on what they want to achieve, how do they then navigate how much of a directive and how much of a participatory approach will they take?
Great question. I think it's almost like how long is a piece of string, because you have to ask each individual leader. So to any leader listening to our conversation, I would say that the trick here is, you know what's come out in the research. Have a look at your own situation. Think about whether you are more directive or more participative. Ask some of your colleagues, ask your peers, ask some of your subordinates. Why not skip a level and ask somebody maybe one step over you? You know, it's often interesting how people perceive you and your style. I'm not saying there's any right or wrong in this. There isn't any of that. What there is right for the circumstances. And only you, the leader, knows what that is. But it would seem to be that if you come down on the conclusion that you're probably more directive than you are participative, you might want to think about adjusting your overall balance to align with the majority of the top performing leaders we worked with. But it's a choice. If you say, do you know what? I'm being perfectly successful being dictatorial, or I'm being perfectly successful being so democratic I'm horizontal, and it's working, who am I to tell you how to do your job better? What we're doing with the secret code is offering you more choice.
You put communication in the center of effective and successful leadership.
Yes.
is there such thing as too much communication? Do you find that leaders can over-communicate with their teams to the point where their teams feel that their leaders may become a nuisance to their roles, their tasks, and how they're performing it?
Oh, yeah. It's that perennial thing that you hear. You know, you mentioned at the start of this conversation that I've worked in over 60 countries with a whole load of businesses, and that's true. Do you know what? If I had a pound or a dollar for every time somebody has said to me, you know, when I've gone and said, so tell me, you know, what's going on around here? And people say, well, it's communication, isn't it? You know? And it's usually, well, there isn't enough of it, or it's the wrong sort, or so on and so forth. So flippantly, I think, Zara, I would probably say to you, I don't think you can ever have too much communication. Mm. You know, it's good to talk. On the other hand, I think you make a very valid point when you poke a stick at not necessarily the frequency of communication, but it's probably about the quality of the communication. So again, I would encourage any leaders listening to our conversation to consider this. Very often organizations, or very often leaders, will communicate a whole load of what. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what needs to happen. This is what we're going to do. What. I would suggest that that's okay, but without providing a context for the what. In other words, why? Why should I even care? How is this important? You know, what is your vision as to call to action as to why I should even listen or observe this communication? So I think I would encourage leaders to think about how they're connecting. At an emotional level, it's back to that human touch. And I think that's the other thing. I think there's so much techno babble that's talked in business today. And we often in my world call that hypnotic language. You know, the aspirational target for the business over the next quarter will be a 13% growth in our market share. I'm already snoring, Asara. You know? You know, why can't you just say, do you know what? We've got really fantastic products, really great people. Mm. And over the next 3 months, what we want to do is to take that to the world and show people how brilliant we are and how much they need what we have to offer. I mean, to me, that's better communication. Mm. We call that enriched language. So I think it's important to think about not what we communicate, but how we communicate and why we communicate. And the final thing on communication is that I would always say that it's about seeking feedback. So many people who are in leadership positions and who don't succeed, from our research, seem to be those who would transmit a message. Oh, I've sent out a memo, I've communicated. No, you've transmitted. What in your message encourages people to give you feedback, to respond? Mm. You know, you might not always like what you get, and you may not always agree with what you get back. That, again, is the leader's choice. Yeah? But especially today, in this uncertain and ambiguous world in which we live, unless you give people a feeling that they have a say in things, I think you're on a hiding to nothing.
Hmm. It's interesting because it's the whole notion of sincere communication, not just simply talking to teams.
So right. Let's add a fourth then, authentic.
Yeah, being authentic, being sincere. Because I find that with many organisations in today's climate, a lot of leaders, a lot of unsuccessful leaders have titles which speak for them. And by that I mean that they have a title as the head of this, the manager of this, the CEO of this. And people below them can often see that hierarchy. And it's like you said, even though you have that label, you need to, it's not about what you're saying, it's about how you're saying it. So even though you are my superior, you are authentic, you are sincere, you are communicating on a level which makes me understand that I can work with you in a more effective way for the business and for the team-on-team dynamics.
Well, on that point, one of the iconics who we interviewed, in the book, is a lady called Karen Penny. Mm. Karen is currently a vice president at Western Union Bank. And to that very point, you know, she made a comment to me when I was discussing this with her, and she said that, you know, it's very easy to assume that because you have a job title, that you somehow have all of the knowledge and all of the power and all of the glory. And she says that she's made it her business in her career to ensure that she's constantly approachable and authentic. And it's made me smile, because in our discussion, she said, you know what, Mark? She said, there's nothing wrong with just being nice. And she said, it's a word that so often is badly used, but just to be nice to people, because at the end of the day, you might have the position, but you will not succeed in that position if the people who are working with you in your team are there for you, mm-hmm. who've got your back. You have to have their back, and they've got to have your back. And I think Karen is so right.
Mm. The book ends with a chapter called Unlock Your Code.
Yes.
So for those listening, can you give them one key takeaway, one piece of advice that will motivate them to unlock their code and keep developing their leadership skills? You mentioned great ones such as being nice, working with your team, being authentic, understanding how much participation and direction you should give. But what is one key takeaway, aside from the many others which this book covers, which is very important and is one of the codes to successful leadership?
Well, I think, again, slightly flippantly, I could respond by saying, really, do you want to be the best possible version of yourself? And if so, read the book. So there's one good bit of advice.
It's a good plug-in.
And on one level, that's flippant, but on another level, it absolutely isn't, because in the book, what you've got there is the synthesis of hundreds of years of experience of leaders from all around the world in different industries. And I think it's a long time since a body of work has put that kind of insight between two covers. Now, on the other hand, I think I would say the one thing that would help many people is give yourself some time. We are time poor in today's world, especially in leadership roles. And I think if you give yourself some time to reflect on the kind of leader you are and the kind of, almost the kind of legacy that you would want to leave, if you were gone tomorrow, what would you want your people to say about you? What would you want them to feel about you? And I think that gives a massive indication as to maybe the kind of things that you're doing right at the moment and the things that you might want to change. Mm-hmm. So I would say, give yourself some time to think about the kind of leader you are, and then think about what you could observe or learn from other people. And again, in the book, we talk about how you can effectively model what other people are doing, what you observe in them. There is a specific way you can do that to make it part of your own DNA. But if you can keep the best version of you and incorporate some of the best bits that you see in others or that you might read about in this book, mm-hmm. then suddenly you become, again, a more flexible, a more enriched person in the round. Mm. And again, we've sort of ended where we began by saying that if you can do that, what you give yourself is choices. You become more flexible. Mm. And in our world, we often say that the person who displays the greatest flexibility in the way that they think and the way that they behave is in the end likely to have the most influence on others.
Fantastic. And lastly, for anyone who is interested in knowing more about you and your work, where can they find you? Where can they follow you? And where can they find more updates?
Well, I'm a big LinkedIn user. Mm-hmm. And I thought you might ask me this question. And I think LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn, connect mm-hmm. with me on LinkedIn. I always enjoy quote unquote meeting new people on LinkedIn. Mm. And obviously that feeds into Twitter and so on and so forth. The website of my business is www.transformperformance.com, and you will always find us there. you know, look out for following Transform Performance International on Twitter and on LinkedIn as well. And you will see increasing numbers of updates in the coming weeks and months as the momentum around this book, which has already taken me by surprise, I have to say, increases. So that's it.
Fantastic. And for those interested in buying a copy of The Leader's Secret Code, it's now available on amazon.co.uk, the Lead Publishing website, and likewise your local stores as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fantastic. Thanks to everyone who's been listening. Don't forget to keep an eye out on our social media. That's at Lead Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more information about new books, expert opinions, and of course, more podcasts with thought leaders such as Mark Ridley, don't forget to join us again on Lead Radio Podcast. I've been your host, and we'll see you next time. Take care.